I've heard several comments from people that was talking about with the people, for the people, and by the people. Being a black woman from Mississippi, I've learned that long ago that's not true. It's with a handful, for a handful, by a handful. But we're gonna change that, baby. We are going to change that because we're going to make democracy a reality for all of the people of this country.
Today, we observe Black History Month by looking at the life of Fannie Lou Hamer, a disabled sharecropper who became one of the most influential people in the struggle for voting rights in Mississippi. There are many ways to teach Black history. Most of us would think of books, lectures, films, and television series. We might even think of music, given the importance of music in the African American movement and the importance of African Americans in developing so many genres of American music. But few of us would think of opera. For Mary Watkins, an eclectic African American Oakland composer and performer, the civil rights struggle could only be told in opera. Her opera, Dark River, the story of Fannie Lou Hamer and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, premiered at the Oakland Opera Theater last November. Fannie Lou Hamer originated the line, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired." In 1964, she gave electrifying testimony in front of the Credential Committee at the Democratic National Convention, ending her speech with the challenge, "I question America. Is this America the land of the free and the home of the brave?" In our next segment, Mary Watkins talks with Kate Raphael about this largely unsung hero of the Black freedom movement.
Mary Watkins burst into the music scene in 1978 with her Olivia Records release of the album Something Moving. She is a composer, pianist. She works in many styles from blues to classical. And her latest project was an opera entitled Dark River, which is based on the life of Fannie Lou Hamer and the civil rights organization SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Mary, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Why did you decide to do an opera about Fannie Lou Hamer?
That period was so rich. It was unlike any other in our history, really. I read a book called Parting the Waters many, many years ago. That was by Taylor Branch, and it was a history of the civil rights movement. And in reading that book, I thought, golly, somebody should do an opera about this. Now, I thought of an opera rather than, say, maybe a film or a play, because there was something about the whole movement that was so very musical. I mean, people sang their way through all sorts of danger. Having had a background as a church musician, for instance, I had been playing piano in church since I was about 8 years old. I thought that there was something that I could bring to that.
Tell me how you decided to focus on Mrs. Hamer and what you admired about her.
I read a lot of books on the movement, and I had read quite a bit of them focused on Martin Luther King. Mostly it was on the men that were involved. At the time, I was not of the movement. I was living in Washington, D.C. when a lot of this was going on. I didn't know about Fannie Lou Hamer then. My first idea was, many years ago, was Martin Luther King. But, I mean, everybody focuses on him, right? So somebody said, well, why don't you write about Fannie Lou Hamer? And I thought, well, I don't know. And, of course, once I started to read about her, it was a fascinating, fascinating read. She had a very, very, very hard life. She was born in 1917 in Mississippi. There were, I think, 21 children. And she was the last of 21 children. They were all sharecroppers. They worked in the fields. And she was, from the time I think she's about 4 years old, working in some fashion or the other. And somehow or another, they were able to save up enough to move off the plantation to their own farm. They weren't there very long before jealous and resentful neighbors decided that they didn't want them there.
So, white neighbors.
Yeah, white neighbors didn't want them there. And they poisoned the livestock, and they destroyed the equipment that they used in the field. So they had to move back. They weren't able to recover from that. They had to move back onto the plantation.
And how did she get involved in the civil rights movement?
there had been a lot of action in the South, but Mississippi, nobody wanted to wrestle with Mississippi. It was pretty bad. And so they kind of stayed out of Mississippi. So finally, some of the SNCC people had decided to go into Mississippi and talk to the people about their right to vote, because nobody there was registered. There were very, very, very few blacks were registered. So they came in and one night and had this mass meeting, and Fannie Lou had gone reluctantly because she didn't really think that it mattered too much. She didn't have a whole lot of faith that things would change. She'd been involved in the NAACP, and things were still pretty much the same. So she did go to this meeting, and the speaker told the people there that they had the right to vote, and she'd never heard that before. I mean, she'd never heard that blacks had a constitutional right to vote. She just assumed they didn't. She was very inspired by the speaker, and when at the end of his speech, he asked for volunteers to go try to register. And she went to try and register to vote. I think she only took the test. Of course, she took the test. She failed it the first time because, you know, nobody could pass it, really.
And this was a literacy test.
This was a literacy test. Well, no. She was given some part of the Mississippi state constitution to copy, hand copy, and interpret. And since she didn't know anything about that, she couldn't interpret it, so she didn't pass.
And white voters were not required to take a test like this,
they weren't required. They weren't required to take anything. They could just go vote. And most people, unless they studied, could not pass the test. The second time she took it, she passed. Because the students who would come in, SNCC students, and also people from CORE, were down there working. They had freedom schools, and they would teach people to read, and because a lot of them couldn't. Some couldn't read or write. And they would help them understand what they were reading. And so she was a pretty quick study. She only had a sixth grade education, but she was a very smart woman.
So how did she go from registering to vote, being a, you know, one of the people that SNCC was organizing, to being an organizer and field secretary for SNCC?
After she tried this first time to register, when she went back home, Mr. Marlowe, who was the plantation owner, told her that she had to remove her name from the list of people who wanted to register or leave. Now, she'd been working there 18 years. He said, you gotta remove your name. Well, she wouldn't remove it, so she had to leave that night. She went into town and stayed at the home of some friends. Well, the Ku Klux Klan, or whoever these thugs were riding through the town and shooting into houses of people who had registered. And they heard that Fannie Lou was staying at the Tucker's house, so they shot into that house. And it got really scary. So Fannie Lou's husband was really frightened about this because they had two young girls. He had her leave, move to another, I don't know, town maybe 50 or 60 miles away. She was kind of underground, so to speak, and Charles McLaren was sent by Bob Moses to find her because Bob Moses had seen enough of this woman, just the little bit that he had seen. She was very powerful, very persuasive, and she could inspire people. And they put her on a small salary. It was like $10 a week if they had $10. And so that's how she got involved. And she was probably one of their most powerful fundraisers.
And what she's probably best known for, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners haven't heard much about Fannie Lou Hamer, especially if they're younger. She's best known for co-founding the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party and for making a speech during the 1964 Democratic Convention, I believe, when the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which was an independent slate of candidates that had been elected in sort of shadow primaries, challenged for the delegation, challenged the official Democratic Party delegation to the convention, which was segregated, which was all white, correct?
You're right.
And so tell us about that and how you used that, worked that into your opera. That was sort of the climax in a lot of ways of the opera.
The build-up for the convention, that's what the whole summer of 64 was about. 1964 was about registering people to vote. It had been pretty much decided that nothing was going to change until they got the ballot. People had been killed over, you know, people who had registered to vote. Like there was, I think his name was Herbert Lee, a father of 9 kids who was a pretty prosperous man, a black man who had went to register and vote, and he was murdered for that. You know, and so it was a real scary thing. You know, they would go spend hours and hours talking to people to get people registered, teaching them as much as they could about how the process works. They're forming groups. SNCC was the kind of organization that came in and worked with the people and helped them to form groups to help themselves, because they knew they weren't going to be there forever. They had a conference, a statewide conference for the Freedom Party, and they elected 60 delegates to go to Atlantic City, which is where the convention was held.
And they ended up being offered a couple of at-large seats.
Yeah, well, see, people, the delegates that went, they were all the poor people. They were the people of the earth, because the middle class was a little bit suspicious too, and they were a little bit afraid of, people were afraid of having the boat rocked. The people in the delegation were made up of everybody, but quite a few of them, and probably the majority of them, were people that did not have professions, didn't really have much education, and they were like Fannie Lou. They got there, they really believed that when the convention saw what had been going on in Mississippi, that the party itself was illegal because they were not allowing everyone the opportunity to participate. And so they really believed that once they got their, they made their report to the Credentials Committee, that this would be grounds to dismiss the regular Democratic Party in favor of the new party, the Freedom Democratic Party. And it was a hard lesson. Hubert Humphrey had been offered by Johnson to be his running mate, to be Johnson's running mate. And Hubert Humphrey was a friend of civil rights. Well, Johnson put him on the spot, and they wanted this Freedom Party, these people, to shut up and go away. They couldn't do anything about what was going on in Mississippi. They didn't want to have that choice put to them, because that would mean they would lose the South.
They couldn't win an election without those Southern Democrats. My recollection is that the Southern Democrats were more the party of segregation at that time than the Republicans.
The Dixiecrats, or whoever they were, he gave Humphrey the task of telling them that, well, no, they couldn't unseat the regular party, but they could offer them these 2 seats at large, which didn't have any vote or anything, really. And everybody seemed to, even Martin Luther King, who was there, Roy Wilkins, all these people, they thought that they should accept the offer. I mean, it is a start. And Fannie Lou, right from the get-go, said it didn't sound right to her. She said, I didn't come here for no 2 seats. She felt that they had to decide as a unit, but she made it very clear that she did not accept the offer. And so they all came together and decided they would not accept the offer. After that, there was a lot of burnout and disillusionment.
In the opera, and I'm sure that there's a little artistic license maybe in terms of the timing, you chose to have 2 scenes after that scene at the Atlantic City Convention. First, she comes back and finds, and her husband tells her that their daughter had died. How historically accurate was that?
That wasn't historically accurate. Her daughter did die, and her daughter died for the reasons that were expressed in the opera.
Which were?
She was refused entrance at the local hospital. Fanny Lou drove her from the hospital where she was rejected to a town 40 miles away. And by the time she got there, her daughter was dead.
So, but in the opera, you have you changed it a little and had the story be that her husband took their daughter to the hospital while Fanny was in Atlantic City, which in some ways makes one a little, you know, less sympathetic to her, makes you almost question her as a mother, you know, or her priorities. Did you make that decision consciously?
Well, I was very much aware that this could be interpreted in that way. For instance, she had to leave home. She left her husband and the two daughters because they had work to finish up. She left them, you know, and a lot of people thought, well, what kind of mother would do that? Fanny Lou was destined. It was much bigger than she was, and she knew that. It was, and it didn't mean that she didn't love her daughters or that she loved children. And these were adopted kids. I mean, they weren't kids that were born to her because, you see, Fanny was sterilized without her permission. She didn't even know this had happened until, you know, after it happened. She was put in the hospital for one thing, and while she was in there, they sterilized her.
And then the other thing I wanted to ask about was, so at the very end of the opera, Mrs. Hamer's asked to leave SNCC. SNCC is deciding to expel the white members and be an all-black organization, and she does not agree with that decision, and she's asked to leave. So first, my question is, how historically accurate is that? And secondly, you know, I think some of the people that I saw the opera with felt like they wished that had not been there, that they felt like it was somehow leaving on a negative note about the organization and the movement.
I thought the fact that she was sort of dismissed from SNCC was important. And of course, the reason I thought so, it had to do with the difficulty of the movement. Whenever a group is marginalized, like blacks were, it sets people often against one another in trying to get out of the box, so to speak. And they loved Fanny Lou, but the thing was, they felt betrayed. They felt betrayed by the government, and they began to feel that their white allies, you know, that they should go work in their own communities because nothing was happening in the black community. And this was long after the convention. I mean, things, even after they got voting rights, you had to fight all the time for everything, hard. She wasn't thrown out of SNCC. They just told her she was irrelevant. You know, integration is the old way, and that's your way. We are moving on. The term black power began to surface at some time. And she understood, but she didn't agree. She felt that we had to learn to live together and to work together.
I don't go to a lot of opera, I have to admit. I think that Dark River, which I saw when it premiered in Oakland in November, was probably the second opera I'd ever actually seen. And it's not maybe the most accessible art form. So why did you decide, as an African-American feminist jazz pianist, I mean, that's how a lot of us know you, why did you decide to start working in opera?
I've played all kinds of music. I like all kinds of music. And I can express myself in many different forms. And I like to have the space, you know, the room to express. You can't do a whole lot in 32 bars, you know, in a 32-bar song. I majored in classical music in college, and I got a degree in music composition, my bachelor's. And I always wanted to go beyond, you know, just the jazz forms, quartet or the combo. And opera, just it's the drama. I think at one point I realized that the thing that holds me with music is the drama of music. Music itself, it just has a drama. And I think, you know, I have a streak of the dramatic. And there was nowhere else to go with the idea I had.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom.
Fannie Lou Hamer continued her activism after leaving SNCC. She ran for Congress in 1964 and 1965 and was seated as a member of Mississippi's official delegation to the Democratic National Convention in 1968. She was an outspoken critic of the Vietnam War. She also worked with Head Start, the Freedom Farm Cooperative in Sunflower County, and Martin Luther King Jr.'s Poor People's Campaign. She died of breast cancer at age 59. Mary Watkins has composed for symphony orchestras, chamber ensembles, film, dance, and theater. She has produced at least 6 albums. Her first opera was Queen Clara, about the life of Clara Barton, the Civil War nurse who founded the American Red Cross. She spoke with Women's Magazine's producer, Kate Raphael.